Please be turning to Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17. We now look at this passage in a little bit more detail. The word kingdom does come up. Of course, we're going to see that this is the earthly, worldly kingdom of the persecutors, the idolaters. And we have in verses 7 through 18 the explanation of the mystery of the woman and of the beast. We've just briefly looked at this so far, but we want to look at this in a little bit more detail. A question has come up about this particular passage, and this is one of those passages that, like many you could contend in Revelation, requires a more detailed study. So notice particularly where we have talked some about this. Notice particularly verses 9 through 12 at this point. Here is the mind which has wisdom, verse 9. The seven heads are seven mountains or hills on which the woman sits. We've identified this so far as the woman sitting on the seven hills of Rome. And so you have this woman is seen as Babylon, symbolically Rome. She is sitting on the back of that first beast that came up in chapter 13 out of the sea. She is seen to be sitting on the back of the Roman Empire. Notice you have verse 10. This is where things get, you could say, a lot more interesting. These, some of your translations there, so these are also seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. So now we're dealing with the seven heads. Now, we've talked about what is at the head of a kingdom, the king. So at the head of a kingdom is a king, and we're dealing here with seven heads. Of course, this beast has what? Seven heads and ten horns. He's given the interpretation, the angel's given the interpretation of the seven heads. And so there's seven kings. And we know that these are specific to kings, first of all. Otherwise, you would have the terminology kings can, and we'll talk more about this, can represent the kingdom. These are not going to be seven different kingdoms represented, but seven kings of that one kingdom, because you have the seven heads of this beast. The beast is the Roman Empire. So these are seven kings of the Roman Empire. Notice we're given and it's interesting too here in Revelation. When something is to be left more generic, you don't have a lot of specifics, do you? Here you have more specifics. So we're going to be given a little bit more detail than concerning other matters that we'll talk about. Here you have five have fallen, that means five are dead. One is, that means one is currently living, one is present. And the other has not yet come. So not yet come, that's future. So that deals with seven. It's one that's coming. But then notice there's an eighth that is also mentioned here in the next verse, but specific to the seventh one. When the seventh one comes, he must continue a short time. We identified that as Titus, if you recall, 2 years, 2 months and 20 days that he was actually a ruler. And that is the greatest specificity of trying to give us a timeline when you put all of this together, as we discussed. But notice then you have verse 11. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth. So the beast himself is seen as an eighth head, though you have seven heads, but seen as an eighth king, and is of the seven, is going to destruction. So we identified that king as best we can tell from everything according to history and what is stated, that was Domitian. But that brings us then to another very interesting phrase. Verse 12, the ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet. And here you're going to have even this terminology of ten kings have received no kingdom as yet. Well, now, you begin to ask questions. Well, is this going to be, are these ten kings, are they are they heads? Are we talking about, you know, kings before, and now we're talking about kings again? And are these 10 horns that you saw, the seven-headed beast that has 10 horns, are these kings upon kings? Because you have the heads, obviously, are going to be the kings. We're told such, verse 10. But now we're told about the 10 horns are 10 kings. And that imagery would get quite confusing. So we're going to have to get some background. When we talk about the 10 horns, which you saw are 10 kings, which receive no kingdom as yet, which even not as yet, that's future. But they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So we begin to talk about this concept of the 10 horns. While many view this is talking about 10 literal rulers of the 10 provinces. There were obviously more provinces than this, but these were the 10 imperial provinces that they will try to identify. Or, if not the 10 imperial provinces, then they will say, well, these are rulers of perhaps Parthia or Asia or Palestine or even some unknown location, some unknown place, or just somewhere else. But notice, after explaining the heads of the beast, which are clearly kings, and we have specifics to that stated in the text, the angel, though, now explains the horns. And we do have this background. Let's go back to Daniel. We've been to Daniel before, but we go to Daniel again. Notice Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Just as you have in verses 4 through 7 providing the background for the beast, we're also going to provide, we're going to see background for the 10 horns, just in a not far removed within chapter 7 from this explanation, or the background, I should say, of this beast. So notice again, verses 4 through 7. You have these four beasts that come up from the sea. Now, each of them are different, verse 3. Verse 4, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. And after this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. Verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had what? Had 10 horns. Interestingly, we know that Daniel's fourth beast is the beast that we see that first comes up in Revelation, being that sea beast of Revelation chapter 13. And I want to point out something that it would have been nice to just by way of pointing out and making a parallel, but I happened to just be studying this more, and it dawned upon me, you'd seen this well before I did. And it's obvious in the text of Revelation 13 that when you're reading this, notice verse 2, beginning, the beast which I saw was like a leopard. Well, which one was that? The one that's like a leopard in Revelation. Well, it's actually the third beast, isn't it? Okay, so you have the first statement in Revelation is a leopard. It's the third one in Daniel. And then you have in verse 2 also, his feet were like the feet of a bear. Well, which one is that? That's the second beast, isn't it, in Daniel. And then you have in verse 2 of Revelation 13, his mouth like the mouth of a lion. Well, where do you have this about the lion? It's actually the first beast. And so don't you have just a reversal You have lion, bear, leopard in Daniel, and in Revelation the order is leopard, bear, lion. This is clearly a reference to Daniel's fourth beast, which was, you could call, a composite of the three previous beasts. We get more detail when we obviously look at Revelation. So provides the background for the beast, Daniel 7, 4 through 7. But notice also, continuing on in Daniel chapter 7, we're going to find verses 7 and 8 and 20, as well as 24, background for the ten horns. So verses 7 and 8, he mentions it had ten horns, verse 7. Notice verse 8, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up from among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots, and there were in this horn, and there in his horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now, you're going to find commentators say a whole lot about this little horn and the removal of the other three horns. Revelation doesn't deal with that, does it? And so we don't have Revelation making use of the first horn removing of the three, and there have been those attempts that you have them trying to make it specific to emperors, kings, and even that concept of, you remember that short period of 18 months to 2 years where you had Galba and Otho and Vitellius that were taken out, and they want to say, well, those were three that were removed. And then Vespasian comes in, who, interestingly, on that note, you know, just so you see how some will do with this, because I don't believe this is the proper explanation of all this, but they will also say, well, you know, Josephus, back in A.D. 67, 2 years prior to Vespasian's rule in December of A.D. 69, had forecast that it was going to be Vespasian who would be Roman emperor, but then you had these usurpers come in, Galba, Otho, and Vitellius, and Vespasian took out Vitellius, and you had, you know, all of that to them trying to make that parallel with Daniel. Well, okay, that's a stretch, but we actually can do better than that within this understanding of this whole concept of the ten horns. First of all, we talk about what horns represent in Scripture. Throughout the Old Testament, horns of the altar, the horns of God, it's pretty well established. Everybody seems to understand. It gives this concept of power or strength. And you'll see that even within Revelation itself, Revelation chapter 5. Revelation chapter 5, verse 6. Revelation chapter 5, verse 6. And I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne of the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb as though it had been slain, having what? Seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And so you have this concept of complete strength with seven horns. And so it's not hard to actually establish just that concept of horns. Now notice this. We're told that the horns represent kings. What do the kings represent? And we can't miss this. We can't isolate the kings from the kingdom. You don't have a kingdom without a king. And do you have a king if you don't have a kingdom? So you have this concept of the kings represent kingdoms. But now, as we go into more detail within the book of Daniel itself, we're going to see exactly how this whole concept of the word kings is actually even used. Notice Daniel chapter 7, verse 11. I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. And so you have this concept of the horn speaking. Now, is this a king, or is this a king representative of a kingdom? Well, we keep going. Chapter 7, verse 21. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. Okay, so we ask the question again. Is this horn an individual by himself, that is, he's so arrogant that he is making war against the saints, and so it's one guy on a mission by himself, and he's declared war. You know, some people are going to take that view, and they're going to talk about him as what? The Antichrist, right? And perhaps the man of sin, and that may be a view that is that you'll see out there. And is that the concept, that this horn represents an individual, or is it that this horn is representative of a kingdom? Notice also chapter 8, verse 3. Then I lifted my eyes and saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram which had two horns. Now notice how the word in terminology of horns is being used here. Horns, again, the concept of power or strength. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. Notice then, chapter 8, verses 5 through 9. And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Then he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. What does that mean? He broke his strength, right? He broke his power. There was no power in the ram. So if we missed it with that terminology, we get it in the very next day. There was no power in the ram to stand withstand him. He broke his strength, broke his power, broke his horns. But he cast him to the ground, down to the ground, and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Notice verse 8. Therefore the male goat grew very great. But when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. Notice verse 9. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. The glorious land would have been Palestine, the land of Israel. Notice then you have verse 12. Because the transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all of this and prospered. Then notice verses 20 through 22. Here's the interpretation. The ram which you saw having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. Well, is that just these two guys on their own, or is that representative, the kings representative of the kingdoms of Media and Persia? So the kingdom of the Medias, the Media and Persia kingdoms. Yes. And of course, we're in this discussion, you have what are the three empires that are being discussed, and the fourth one, the unnamed one. You had the Babylonian kingdom, the Medo-Persian kingdom, number two, and then the kingdom of Greece, which is in the very next verse, verse 21. And the male goat is, now, interestingly, the New King James has the kingdom of Greece. You may have a footnote. Literally, you have the word king. And the male goat is the king of Greece. That's literally what you have. But my little footnote also says, literally king, representing his kingdom. Compare Daniel 7, verses 17 and 23. So you have the male goat is the king of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. So what you have then is you have the word king is being used for kingdom. And it's really an interchangeable thing. In a situation like this, you have the male goat is the king, i.e. the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is what? The first king. There would be more than one king. Notice then verse 22. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. So we'll seek to answer this question more fully next time because we have more information. But we have to have the background to see what is this terminology about. Horn, power, strength. And when it says that they are kings, does that mean just kings on their own individuals, or is it kings representative of their kingdoms? concerning the ten horns, it's certainly going to be a very generic reference to kingdoms, and we'll plan to look at that more in the book of Revelation. Whereas we have the specifics of the kings of the seven heads, the heads being specific to the kings of that one kingdom, that seven-headed, ten-horned beast, and so the kings of the Roman Empire, but then these ten horns that we're now discussing is going to be a reference to ten kingdoms that are actually not going to be specified, but we'll also talk about the numerology. Sometimes the numerology where you have, when it's mapped out, where you have seven kings, and then you have the beast is the eighth, and you know, five have fallen, one is yet to come. That's more specific. You have an interpretation. Now, some don't even want to take that literally. I would say, yes, I think we do take that literally. But then whenever you have the numerology of ten horns, but you don't have any specifics given, it's much like we talked about the lamb having seven horns. It's a reference of complete strength and power, and we'll talk more about these details, Lord willing, later on. If you're here today, if we can